Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Jack Farron, your host. And before we get into today's episode, a quick mention that the Social Impact Journal has been ranked number 16 of the top 30 social impact podcasts on the web right now by Feedspot. So a huge thank you for everyone's support so early in this journey. Today, I'll be talking with Ernest Wisen, who is the president and CEO of the Coalition of Community-Based Organizations in Malawi. And we'll be talking about a really hot topic right now in the international development space, which is around the localization of aid and the role that community organizations play. This is really not an episode to miss, so do stick around with us. We'll be on YouTube. We're also on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, and all other major podcast platforms to listen into. So here is the trailer.
My name is Ernest Wisen, and I'm the current president and CEO for Community-Based Organizations Coalition for Human Rights and Good Governance here in Malawi. These are non-profits. CBOs are community, they are embedded right in the communities, and they depend heavily on voluntary contributions for the labor, for labor and also for financial support. And we as a CBOs Coalition, we believe that giving communities voices should be more than consultation, but letting the communities lead. And on the same scenario, while also some NGOs have also responded to pressure to shift their power by re-evaluating their operating models and partnerships with local actors, not all have followed suit.
There's a lot of discussion and conversation now in the international development sector around the localization of aid and strengthening of community-based organizations.
Most of the NGOs and even the funders haven't yet committed, even to say maybe we're committing 25% of our funds to go towards into this process, or they haven't even indicated the targets. But right now, there's too much conversation is going around in the global summits, global conferences, global meetings. But we haven't yet seen the results. So what do we want now? We want actions going forward.
Good morning, Ernest. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Jack. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well. It's good to have you on. And I know we're discussing a very important topic today around community-led development and localization. But before we dive into that topic, maybe an introduction from yourself to the audience.
Thank you very much, Jack. My name is Ernest Wisen, and I'm the current president and CEO for Community-Based Organizations Coalition for Human Rights and Good Governance here in Malawi. Actually, I happen also to be one of the pioneers for the establishment of this first kind of its kind coalition in Malawi, because we have never had like a grouping, an association, a coalition, some sort of community-based organizations in Malawi. So I happen to be one of the champions, actually one of the pioneers for its establishment. We established this coalition anyways in 2019. And when we were actually starting, we had like a very small number of CBOs, like 20. But as I'm talking now, the coalition has grown. My role as a president and a CEO, actually, I started as a national chair, but then actually I was responsible for moving around, mobilizing the community-based organization to be part and parcel of this coalition so that we build one voice, so that we can have one voice as CEOs in Malawi. So that's what my role. Then I got elevated early this year to the position of president and CEO after the board of trustees and council of representatives, actually, so that at least we have achieved a lot from the few years we got established as a coalition here in Malawi.
Thank you, Ernest. So what is a community-based organization?
A community-based organization, it's an organization which is local, which is actually run by the community members themselves, and actually it's embedded right there in the communities. It's embedded right there in the communities, and even when we talk of as a CBO per se, it does provide social services at the local level. These are non-profit organizations whose activities are based primarily on volunteer efforts.
In terms of the size of these CBOs, how do they access funding? Is it from government sources, from international sources, from well wishers? What avenues can those CBOs access to raise the funding to deliver the social services you mentioned?
Yes, as I've mentioned here, actually, that these are non-profits. CBOs are community, they are embedded right in the communities, and they depend heavily on voluntary contributions for labor and for financial support. But some of the CBOs do also explore different avenues for financial support to actually attain financial self-reliance and also access to financial resources. Sought in more than one way, ranging from accessing financial support from other organizations like foundations, corporate social responsibility arms, and also local resources and support, etc. And they also raise their money from generating income by taking up income generating activities, that is, and also making use of resources available to generate funds, other kind of support, like asking volunteers to raise funds, building a diverse network and good way to raise funds. That's it. But mainly, CBOs are self-help groups and actually they depend heavily on greater contributions.
Okay, and you mentioned 1,000 CBOs are in Malawi, part of the coalition that you are the president, yes, and CEO of. So what are some of the core thematic areas that those CBOs in Malawi are focusing on?
Most of the CBOs play a very, very significant role in advancing development at the grassroots level, particularly where the state's intervention is limited. And most of the CBOs are working on different fields, ranging from HIV/AIDS, environment, service delivery, human rights and democracy, and these are more just to mention a few. They are actually engaged in those different fields. So mainly when the CBOs were increasing in Malawi, they increased because they saw there was a demand for basic services. And some of the basic services are those actually which I've just mentioned here. So there are a lot actually which the CBOs are doing, and in fact they're filling in the gaps which is where the government is not able to reach. The CBOs are filling those gaps. It's like a developmental partner to the government, one of the developmental partners to the government.
Understood, Ernest. And there's a lot of conversation in the sector right now around the localization of aid and strengthening of community-based organizations. So given your knowledge of the sector, why do you believe that community-based organizations are an effective vehicle for local development?
Yes, Jack. We hear it everywhere. It is time to shift the power and localize aid. Communities should be in the driver's seats on the changes that they envision. And this buzzword, shifting the power and localization of aid, sings around at most of conferences and meetings. But do NGOs and funders really walk the talk? In reality, communities still have little control over the funds and have limited resources as well, and are hardly ever involved in the development program, but are still being tokenized. As a rallying cry, the Shift the Power campaign movement seemed to ignite something deep and powerful, both disappointment and frustration with existing systems of development and a sense of opportunity, a feeling of hope and optimism that new ways of deciding and doing were not only possible, but they were also starting to emerge. If nothing at all, the campaign has managed to bring community to the very heart of the conversation about aid-assisted development. But once again, local communities like the biblical Moses stand at the brink of the promised land, but they are unlikely to enter it. If there is any real possibility of empowering communities, some power will have to be given voluntarily by those who currently exercise it. In the real world, power is not given up easily, so communities will have to say it and also harness it from the bottom. Local communities must wrestle for control or by all legitimate means, while NGOs must shy away from viewing them as passive actors, seeing them as co-creators and co-conveners and better yet owners of development.
You know, it's really interesting. I'm also hearing a lot of talk in the sector, but you know, it's great to hear your insights from the grassroots levels to see that, you know, this is not actually being transmitted to local communities. Now, I read that USAID have made a commitment in terms of their localization of funding. So maybe you can talk a little bit further about what USAID are doing and whether other international donors are following in their path.
Thank you very much, Jackie, on that. I would agree with you. You said that you've made several commitments and it's building on the past purpose to promote a model of local aid and also inclusive development, where the agency's work is emphasizing on local actors' priorities, needs, goals, and ideas. Yes, in November 2021, USAID announced two ambitious agency-wide targets to track and motivate progress toward this vision. He said USAID will provide at least a quarter of its program funds directly to local partners by the end of the year 2025. And also by 2030, USAID has committed to transfer over 50% of agency programming to local communities. So this is very recommendable, and we want actually most of the INGOs and also the international funders should follow suit, because I think the way which you said the commitments which you have taken, it will really help actually for this localization initiative to move forward in a very fast mode. So we are also urging these other INGOs and funders to follow suit.
Interesting, really interesting stuff. So maybe you could just explain the scenario to me. So for example, if an international NGO is having a project in Malawi and they're working with maybe a community-based organization, the community participation you mentioned is often limited just to consultation. So what does that actually look like in practice, and how is that relationship between the INGO and the local community in the project?
Many INGOs and the funders are increasingly incorporating co-creation processes into their work to build equitable partnerships. However, not all these co-creation processes are created equal. Local organizations and communities are really given a say in the design process, even when invited for that on program implementation. And we as a CBO's coalition, we believe that giving communities voices should be more than consultation, but letting the communities lead. And on the same scenario, while also some INGOs have also responded to pressure to shift their power by re-evaluating their operating models and partnerships with local actors, not all have followed suit. On a side note, we have also observed some INGOs registering as local organizations just to access funding designated for local and national NGOs. And while also most of the INGOs and funders have relied on the national NGOs in the co-creation and design process, it's equally crucial not to sideline local actors and communities, because it has become to be the practice of many national NGOs to fabricate proposals for funding without community interest. And most of the consultation of community interest usually comes after funding is secured. And in most cases, these consultations are nothing but tokenistic, where local communities have to fit supposed needs into a predetermined strategic objective of a donor and also of the implementer. So we find out that this failure involved the community in determining the agenda at the initial stages of the project is a determination of success or failure. And in some cases, like here in Malawi, external consultants are called in to ensure objectivity and sanity in measuring performance and change of their problems. However, local communities are treated like specimen nature rather than active determinants of what changes or could be. So local communities know best what they need, so they should be in the driver's seat. By giving local communities the project lead, Top-down programming is avoided, and the communities receive trust to develop and nurture their actions and decisions. Honestly, she was there.
So, Ernest, to get to that stage where, and I completely agree, you mentioned, you know, communities know their problem best, they should be in the driving seat. So for the money to, let's say, come from an international donor and be led and managed by the community, you know, what process needs to happen there? You know, is there a lot of work that needs to go into strengthening CBOs to be in a position to project manage with those funds and deliver the outcomes that the donors are looking for? You know, what steps do you believe are needed to be taken?
Yes, we are recommending that as NGO, international organizations, international non-government organizations that fund us, seek to shift the power, it should consider taking bold steps to truly transform the systems. And I do recommend as follows. The NGOs should commit to shift more leadership for priority setting, project design, implementation, and measuring results to the people with lived experience and institutions with the capabilities and credibility to drive change in their own countries and communities. And secondly, we are also asking the international and government organizations and also the funders, engagement must become more inclusive, equitable, and responsive to the needs, priorities, and solutions of the communities must be and organizations. And people live with experience in the countries in which those NGOs work. These engagements will help elevate the voices of marginalized populations who have long been silenced. And the third one, we are also recommending that in the international and governmental organizations should invest in local partners to build their own organizations, focusing on areas where they want to improve and grow, and increase the leadership and authority of affected people in determining how resources will be used within their communities to address their priorities and expand their family. And expand their movements to increase access to development aid. And we are also recommending that the international non-government organization could design, implement, and evaluate their programs with local partners and their constituents. Their knowledge, experiences, and also opinions should shape the international organization's priorities and strategies. And the 461, we are also recommending that the international and governmental organizations and partners need to look at the models from the global south of local community groups that have been effective and learn how they have done it. And lastly, we are also asking the intermediate local funders, because we do also like have intermediate funders in our own countries. These intermediate funders should also focus on shifting the power, and their role should be to administer grants to organizations and groups at community level.
So, Ernest, you raise some very good points, but realistically, in the next few years, what do you see happening? If you had a crystal ball and you could make a prediction, do you see a lot happening in the shift the power movement in the next 2 to 3 years? Or is this really dependent on the speed of international funders and their change in mentality?
Yes, if these conversations goes on without making concrete decisions, or what we need right now as the communities and also general communities, what we are looking for is we need tangible results. Actually, we want actual actions, because we have had a lot of conversations of the localization. We have had a lot of conferences, international summits, talking about localization. What we are seeing is most of the NGOs and even the funders haven't yet committed, even to say maybe we are committing 25% of our funds to go towards into this process, or they haven't even indicated the targets in it. So it's only you said who have come clear to say, okay, by 2030, we will be actually committing about 50% of our funding towards the localization process. And 25% by 2025 will meet that target. But most of the international non-government organizations and funders have not been done that yet. And we don't see any tangible results apart from us actually standing like the biblical Moses, waiting for the actions, to see the action, the real actions. Because there's too much conversation going around, but we don't see the tangible results yet. So what we want is, now we want actions. We have talked a lot, now we want actions, and we want also to ask those actually involved in the conversation to start now thinking about setting some of the targets and to say, by such a day, by such a year, we intend to commit so much into the localization process. In that way, then the communities, the groups of the global south, will be able to actually put them accountable. Hold them accountable and say, okay, you committed, you set these targets, did you reach the targets? We'll be able actually to assess their performance. But right now, there's too much conversation is going around in the global summits, global conferences, global meetings, but we haven't yet seen the results. So what do we want now? We want actions going forward.
And Ernest, the role of the CBO's Coalition of Malawi in this, you mentioned around, you know, less talking and more action. So how, as the coalition, are you driving these conversations and moving that towards actions being committed?
Yes, as I've already said, CBO's coalition, it's an active member of the movement, a global movement for committed organization. And we are actually one of the steering committee, national steering committee members in Malawi. And we happen also to have, we also champion for the establishment of, we are the champions of the Shift the Power movement in Malawi. That is at the grassroots level. And this Shift the Power movement is like we are shifting the power closer to the communities. And what we are saying in this movement is we are striving for a more equal way of cooperation. It is a movement that is replacing top down with the people-led involvement, in which people determine for themselves what is important to them. After all, they are the ones that matter. So we are a movement, a strong movement of the Shift the Power in Malawi. So we are mobilizing ourselves, trying to build a collective voice and trying to advocate for this localization, for the localization and also the Shifting the Power in Malawi. So we are working with different partners who are also involved, where we share the similar goals, so that this localization and Shift the Power campaigns should go beyond and actually achieve results at the end of the tunnel.
Ernest, it's been a really great conversation. If someone is listening here from a donor, from an international NGO, or someone in the sector, they want to learn more or they want to connect with you, how can they do that? What social media channels are you active on?
Yes, actually, we just launched our website. They can reach us, they can visit our website, they can learn more, whatever, which campaigns are we actually pursuing, and also learn more what we are doing right now in Malawi. And we have also a LinkedIn platform, and also a Facebook platform.
Wonderful. We'll make sure to link to the website in the show notes for those that are interested. And Ernest's LinkedIn account is also running down the bottom of your screen throughout the episode. So Ernest, it's been a real pleasure to have you on and discuss this really important topic. And I'm sure we can bring you back onto the podcast in the near future to talk about some of these updates and see how those commitments are being made next year in 2024. Thank you so much for your time. And yes, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Jack, for having me. Thank you.